join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The first day of school is just days away for the D.C. public school system. Like so many school systems in the DMV, hiring teachers, COVID, and safety top the list of priorities to be addressed. But we're continuing our back-to-school conversations with the superintendents tonight. And our guest is D.C. Public Schools Chancellor Dr. Lewis Farabee. He joins us to talk about the year ahead. If you have comments or questions for Dr. Farabee, lines are open right now. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Farabee, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Harold, for the opportunity to be on the show this evening. Hope you are well, sir.
I am, and I hope that you are too. And
I am.
So let's start with health and, of course, wellness, because the big issue right now in so many school districts is the COVID-19 policy, vaccines, and the like. Can you give us the COVID 101 policy that all parents need to know prior to sending their children to school next week?
Yeah, thank you for that question, because there's an important step that all families must take to start school on Monday, August 29th for most of our students, and then we'll welcome our pre-K students on September 1st. And that first step is to ensure that every student is able to produce a COVID-19 negative result, and we are distributing kits. That distribution process started this week, and then we will give access throughout the rest of the week for kits. And then we are also encouraging families to go to the COVID centers throughout D.C. They can also get rapid test kits at a COVID centers as well. And as you know, now COVID kits are readily available throughout the community. We ask that families take the COVID test on Sunday evening before school starts on the 28th and report those results that day. They can do that by going to dcpsstrong.com/testing. Again, that's dcpsstrong.com/testing. And then our pre-K students who start school on September 1st will follow a similar process, and they will need to test on Wednesday, August 31st. Many of our other COVID mitigation strategies will be the same as they were last year, as similar as this process, including masking is encouraged, but it is optional. We'll continue our HVAC enhancements that ensure that we got clean air. We will also continue our same cleaning protocols and social distance students and staff to the greatest extent possible. So again, we have more information on our website. Families are welcome to go there, and that is dcpsstrong.com.
As you know, the NAACP is claiming that there are significantly more white students who are fully vaccinated against COVID compared to black students. The first thing I want to ask you is, do you have any numbers, any current numbers that illustrate whether or not that's true?
Yeah, I would agree with the NAACP. We have seen data that suggests that we do have disparities in COVID-19 vaccine participation across race and ethnicity groups nationally and within D.C. And one point that they are raising that we wholeheartedly agree with and have been an active participant is outreach. So we have had a tremendous amount of outreach last school year, even before then, and then we have done outreach over the summer. And one of the strategies that they address is bringing the vaccines to families. And so we have had a number of pop-up opportunities. We do have vaccination available at schools in many cases. So we try to make it as accessible as possible and then reach out and provide clarity on some of the myths about the COVID-19 vaccine to clarify how safe it is for families and ensure that people understand the benefits. Now, what they asked also in their outreach is that there be special accommodations for those students that do not comply with the COVID-19 vaccine requirements set by D.C. Council. And as of to date, there is no other alternative that DCPS is offering at this time.
You said that there is a disparity as it relates to participation, but you didn't say availability.
I don't believe there's a disparity in availability. Access has been strong throughout the city here in D.C., and like I said earlier, we've had a tremendous amount of incentives. We've given out, you know, iPads. We've given out other financial incentives. So we have not only made it available, but we've encouraged families to be vaccinated and also try to help explain the benefits of the COVID-19 vaccine.
So what do you suppose is the reason behind the lack of participation? As you very well know, there was a lot of pushback from many communities, not just the Black community, about the vaccine when it was new. But now it's as common as picking up a Pepsi at the drugstore. And as you suggested, the D.C. public school system has done a yeoman's job at making it easy for children to be vaccinated. Why do you think this is still a problem?
Well, I think that historically, you know, Harold, there's some trust issues that the Black community has had as longstanding with, you know, the healthcare system and trusting whether or not there is equity and fair treatment. And so I think that's still with us today. And it's something that, you know, families do think about. I know it's something that I thought about. So I know that that has been a consideration, but we have seen numbers increase. So I don't want it to be, you know, a glass that's, you know, viewed as empty. You know, it is a glass that has been filling up over time, and it is one that we continue to see uptick in. And I think what we saw is initially, you know, people were like, well, I don't want to be the first person. You know, I want to see what happens when this person takes it or that person takes it. And then there was a lot of myths in our community about what the potential, you know, consequences or side effects might be. I think as time has gone on, people have seen that a lot of that is not true. And they've seen the benefit of the vaccine in terms of not having severe COVID-19 symptoms when you are vaccinated. Yeah. Now, I think what's unclear now is there are more vaccines coming, right? And so I do think there's a wait and see. There's been an introduction of a Omicron vaccine. And again, I know enough to be dangerous about what that will mean for our community, but I think, you know, some people still have the mindset, well, there's more coming that may be more beneficial, or there's a concern that you can still get COVID-19 if you have the vaccine. And we try to help people understand that, yes, that is true, but the severity of your symptoms will be dramatically different based on the science that we know today.
Will there be accommodations made for those unvaccinated students who for whatever reason, will not or cannot be COVID vaccinated, as there were when learning was distance at home during the height of the pandemic?
Yeah, so there always have been, you know, medical and religious exemptions that students can submit documentation for that is not only applicable to the COVID-19 vaccine, but also to other vaccinations as well. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, there's no plan at this time to offer any other accommodations.
I see. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are continuing our back-to-school conversations with the superintendent. My guest is D.C. Public Schools Chancellor Dr. Lewis Farabee, talking about the school year coming up. If you have a comment or if you have a question for the chancellor, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's move on to the issue regarding teachers. D.C., Prince George's, Montgomery, Fairfax, I could name them all, have really struggled with hiring new teachers and retention of some of the veteran teachers. Where is DCPS right now in its hiring practice? Where's the percentage of fully staffed?
Yeah, thank you, Harry. You're spot on. The nation is certainly facing a national teacher shortage. And as an urban school district, as you can imagine, we're certainly impacted by this. But we are very proud to be one of the highest paid school systems in the country. And we've launched multiple strategies and new initiatives to continue our recruitment efforts to ensure that we have exceptionally strong educators and staff in our buildings. And we saw an uptick, actually, in our candidacy pool. So we have more candidates in our pool this year as a result of some of the work that we've done. And we recognize that our educators are getting multiple offers, and they have a lot of decisions to make. So we try to be intentional about our recruitment efforts. And we have multiple strategies to provide supports to schools as well to help them fill their vacancies. Mm-hmm. And we're also not only looking at our teacher vacancies, but just all of our vacancies as a whole. But right now, we are around 150 open positions to start the school year for our teachers. And we're working urgently to fill those slots. That's up a bit from last year. And where we typically are, we typically range about 100. So we're up a little bit, about 50 positions. But again, our staff is working daily and around the clock to ensure that those positions are filled.
What does that shortage mean for teachers who are in position and ready to go next week? How are you going to cover those 150 positions? Are you going to use substitute teachers? Will teachers have to double up? What's the plan?
Yeah, there'll be a combination of strategies that we will implement next week where we have still open positions. So we have a very deep pool of substitutes this year that we will rely on throughout the year. We've also tasked members of our central services team to go out to schools to open the school year in certain vacancies. And then principals are also being creative. But the intent is to ensure that, for one, the student experience is at the highest level, and secondly, there should be minimal impact to other educators who are in position who will start the school year with us next week.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to D.C. Public Schools Chancellor Dr. Lewis Farabee as part of our back-to-school conversations with the superintendents. Let me go to the phone lines. Don, calling from Baltimore. Don, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was a previous school teacher with D.C. Public Schools and left, decided to come back because of the shortage. I was told that I'm able to be a substitute and not a teacher, although I taught 5 years and had great evaluations because I didn't do a praxis test. And I'm thinking all hands on deck, they will be able to give you either a little more work with you, because I told them I'd take the test. But I'm just wondering, why are these roadblocks still being put up with all of the need that exists for qualified teachers?
Dr. Farabee, what is the praxis test for those who aren't
familiar? Yeah, so the praxis exam is a part of the licensure requirement for teachers for DCPS as a part of the requirements set forth by the Office of the State Superintendent of Education in alignment with federal guidance. We have worked with employees on their praxis requirements. And so first and foremost, I want to thank you for your interest in serving in D.C. public schools. And we are happy to get your information from the producers and have someone on our human resource team reach out directly to you to understand which test is outstanding and how we can support you in your interest in joining DCPS again.
Don, the producer is going to speak to you to get your information so that she can get that to the chancellor's office and move forward with that.
Sure.
Okay. Don, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to ask you, Dr. Farabee, as you know, lots of school districts are hiring teachers with degrees, but that are not certified. Is the district doing the same? And if so, what are you doing to make sure that they are certified? You know, what are the requirements? And just generally, what's your opinion about getting these teachers in who are, you know, obviously have degrees, but not necessarily the foundational certification for teaching?
Yeah, I think it's important to ensure that teachers are certified and well-versed in the content that they'll be responsible for teaching every day in the classroom. And I think there has to be multiple avenues and pathways for teachers to get to licensure. So we have been collaborating with the Office of State Superintendent of Education here in D.C. on some creative ways in which teachers can meet those requirements. And so I do believe that we do have to set a standard as a public school system. But I also believe that there are different pathways that teachers can take. So if teachers are interested in serving in DCPS, we're happy to evaluate their credentials and put them on a pathway to licensure so they can serve our students and families.
Real quick, before I go to a break, if someone's listening now and they say, hey, look, you know, I want to jump in with both feet and teach in the D.C. public school system. I'm not certified. I have a degree. I have a master's, whatever it is. What should they do?
They should reach out to our human resources department. They're welcome to reach out to me directly. But if there's a number that you want me to provide later in the show, I can.
Okay.
To make sure that they have a number to call. But we welcome, you know, people that are interested in DCPS. And a lot of times these are people who live in the area, work in the area, and they want to support our young people, and we welcome their interest.
Okay. I'm going to take a quick break. We are talking to Dr. Lewis Farabee, Chancellor of the D.C. Public Schools System. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. But this conversation, back-to-school conversations with the superintendent, continue at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. More of this conversation in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our back-to-school conversations with the superintendents. D.C. Public Schools Chancellor Dr. Lewis Farabee is with us tonight. If you have a comment or a question for the chancellor, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Let's go to David calling from Fort Washington. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, sir. I would like to address the comment that was made in reference to the people who are reluctant to getting the vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also like to express the strong opposition to making it mandated. Firstly, the vaccination is not a prevention. There are still people who are getting COVID even after having the shot. I know, and just in my circle of family, people who have had COVID more than once who are fully vaccinated. I myself am not vaccinated. I have had COVID, and I have had the symptoms were very mild. And as the doctor said, that it's a mistrust issue. Well, not only does the media and those who are mandating this vaccination, they are the ones causing mistrust based upon you. First, it's, well, you won't get COVID if you get the vaccination.
Well, let me stop you there, David, because, and then I'll have Dr. Farabee address that, but no one is saying that you won't get COVID if you're vaccinated. As you may know, President Biden and the First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, both of them are vaccinated and boosted, as well as Vice President Kamala Harris. All three of them had COVID. As we know, and let's not get the information misconstrued, but the vaccine is not to prevent you from getting COVID. The vaccine is to prevent you from getting sick. And I think that is the thing that... Go ahead.
position was firstly being promoted.
Okay, we're talking about now because hold on, David, because this is my show. And let's be really, really clear, because this isn't a COVID conversation. This is a conversation about D.C. public schools. And I'm glad to and I'm happy to have Dr. Lewis Farabee address the COVID issue as it relates to the children, teachers and staff. But to this point, yeah, there's been a lot of information since the very beginning of the pandemic. But what we know now is that, you know, the vaccines, no matter what Pfizer, Moderna, or what have you, they prevent you from getting sick. And I'm glad that you have recovered from getting COVID. Unfortunately, there are some people who have had the vaccine and they have died. My father died. So let's be real clear about that. But Dr. Farabee, please address the mandate for students, please.
Yeah, I think, Harold Fisher, you're spot on. I, too, have experienced the loss of family members and loved one due to COVID. And I think where we know the science is that it can impact the severity of your symptoms mm-hmm. and be life-saving. And so I think any potential for a vaccine to be life-saving is a value and something that we should all consider. But in terms of the mandate, that was approved and placed in legislation by the D.C. Council. So DCPS is required to implement that legislation as it was approved. And so that is our marching orders, and it is our plan to align accordingly.
David, thank you for your phone call. Good health to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to D.C. Public Schools Chancellor Dr. Lewis Farabee about the coming school year. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. Crystal, calling from D.C. Crystal, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon and good evening, Dr. Farabee. I was just calling because I wanted to know what is the status for the teachers' union contract, because teachers have been working out of contract for 3 years, and how far along are we in negotiations?
Yeah, thank you, Crystal, for that question. And if you are a DCPS teacher, we're really grateful for your service and appreciate the work that you're doing now to prepare to receive students on Monday. We are closer than we've ever been before on our negotiations with the Washoe Teachers Union, and it's our intent to maintain our status as one of the highest paying school districts in the nation. We're the fourth highest paying in the country and one of the highest in this region, and we have been negotiating good faith with the Washoe Teachers Union to reach an agreement. Some of the items remain unresolved, but the majority of the topics that we have been negotiating on, we are in agreement. So I anticipate sooner rather than later we'll have an opportunity to finalize the contract. And with great confidence, I can share that what we have offered is very fair and attractive and also represents significant compensation opportunities for our educators to recognize their work.
Okay. Crystal, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The other issue that I wanted to talk to you about is the education of the migrant children who have come across the border, have been bused to D.C. from Arizona, from Texas. The mayor mentioned just this week that there are 40 or so children who will be in the D.C. public school system. How does that work exactly? I mean, they are certainly, you know, newcomers. They are, some would say, they're being made political pawns and the like. The mayor said, and I'm paraphrasing here, we educate children. Period.
Yeah,
you know, talk to me about that specifically as it relates to the migrants.
So building on the mayor's comment, it's important to know, Harold, that we are a very student-centered organization. Like, that's a key value to how we operate, and so we are prepared to provide service to all of our families, including migrant families, to DC and to DCPS. So I personally have had conversation with some of those families and the advocates for those families. We are in regular communication to understand what the needs are, and we will serve accordingly. We are ready to receive students next week, including the 40-some-odd students that are new to D.C., and if they choose to remain in D.C., we will ensure that they have a place in D.C. public schools and then support them in their education and social-emotional needs as well.
Do you have enough teachers to teach, you know, students whose first language is Spanish, where English is not their second language? Obviously, that, you know, that is a challenge that all school systems in the DMV are experiencing. And like you said, 40 or so, that's an entire class, but they're all not of the same age. So you may have five over here, one over here, 10 over here. How are you going to handle, to resource that?
Yeah, you're right. So they're all not at the same age levels. But to answer your question, we have a robust English language learning team. They have actually been recognized both regionally and nationally as a high-performing team, and we also have the staffing to support the students that are new to D.C., along with many other students that will be new to D.C. This coming school year. And so we're ready. We have had proactive conversation to understand what student needs are. I think that's the first step to ensure that the critical services that will be needed day one are there. And I feel confident that we have enough information to serve and we'll be prepared to serve them throughout the school year should they decide to remain in D.C.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Catherine calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Catherine. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was calling. I was a former staffing coordinator with DCPS under the late Arlene Ackerman. And I recall the challenges of recruiting qualified teachers and definitely competing with the surrounding school districts. So I was interested in hearing what incentives are being offered to current teachers to perhaps relocate out of state and reside in the district, whether it's through affordable housing incentives or sign-on bonuses or relocation packages. So I'm curious to hear what's currently being offered, because I know that was a barrier then.
Yeah, thank you, Catherine, for that question. You give me an opportunity to highlight a little bit and maybe even recruit some people that are listening. So I'm proud to report that we do have signing bonus incentives for people, and we have very competitive compensation, and we are also able to help people with housing if they choose to live in the district. There are a number of options that we make available to them as well. We do offer most of these incentives in our schools that have the most vulnerable student populations to ensure that their staffing is where it needs to be throughout the school year. But we're welcome to make those incentives available to anyone who's interested in teaching in DCPS and may be interested in one of the vacancies that we have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Catherine, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to turn to the issue of school safety. I'm sure that you were shocked by the horrific incident in Uvalde, Texas. All of us were. And I'm just wondering, in the wake of that, have you made any adjustments or have you proposed any adjustments to make schools even safer than they are now, considering how that went down in Texas?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we, like many other school districts across the nation, we all were just, you know, taken back by what occurred last school year. And it's a community where if one is impacted, all is impacted. So one of the strategies that we have lifted up this summer is health and safety. Health and safety the well-being of our schools and communities is a priority and paramount. And so we have had a number of readiness strategies, which includes holding expansive training for school staff on active shooter situations and how to utilize our security systems, what to do in a lockdown or a critical response situation. So we want to be really clear what you should do in these scenarios, and it will be practiced in drills throughout the school year as well. We'll also continue to deepen our partnership with the Metropolitan Police Department to help and promote safety in our communities and also to rely on their intel for any potential risks. And this also includes the invaluable role of our school resource officers. They have been phenomenal resources for us. There are officers that are MPD officers that are in our schools daily, and they support our schools and they're also an additional resource for safety. I've been calling on the council to revisit their decision to eliminate this program because we've been phasing out school resource officers. So hopefully they would reconsider that position. But we know that families are interested in learning more about what we've done. So, Harold, what I would encourage families to do is to learn more by going to our website, dcpsstrong.com, and there's more specifics on our safety drills and training and then all the work that we're doing to prepare for a safe and orderly school year beginning Monday.
To that point, let's drill down, if you don't mind, just a little bit about that, because, as you know, Montgomery County has pulled their resource officers out, and so they are now in the community near the high schools, but not in the schools. And how do you balance that, particularly when we are talking about an urban school district where there are concerns about the relationship between police officers and Black people, and in this case specifically Black students? How do you balance that piece with the school safety piece?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I know it's one that many people grapple with, and I can't speak for Montgomery County Schools, but I can share that in D.C., I just haven't heard that, Harold, from my conversations with our staff members, you know, our principals, our teachers. I haven't heard anyone in our schools, families included, say that I don't feel comfortable having school resources officers in the building. Mm-hmm. I just haven't heard that. In fact, I've heard the contrary, and that is I actually feel safer with these individuals in the building. Now, if there are scenarios in which people are being treated unfairly or being targeted by members of law enforcement in our schools, we certainly should not tolerate that, and we will not. But we just have not had those scenarios play out in D.C. public schools where that issue would be a concern for me. And again, I just think it's something that the council should take another look at because I see these as valuable resources. And to put a final point on this, imagine the difference in the response a school community would receive if an officer knows that school community and when an officer doesn't. And I think that's a big difference in having a school resource officer in the building respond to an issue versus a traditional officer coming into a building to respond to an issue.
Mm-hmm. I know you're also familiar with the story that has been rather shocking coming out of Fairfax County, where there was a school counselor who was convicted of soliciting sex from a minor. He slipped through the cracks and had been working in a middle school, and it wasn't until this was discovered last week that the new superintendent of Fairfax County Schools fired him immediately. With all of the rush to get new teachers in and new staff, what are you doing to make sure that D.C. doesn't have that same kind of snafu?
Yeah, I have not been tracking the details on the situation in Fairfax, so I don't want to speak out of turn on the issue, but we certainly face the same challenges that everybody does when they're hiring people, and you want to ensure that anybody that you hire that's going to work in school or work with young people are the right people, and that we continue to protect our students. So that is a priority in D.C., in DCPS, and in fact, it's been such a priority and elevated so that we in some cases have been criticized about how long it takes for a person to be screened to work in DCPS. So we try to balance that with ensuring that we get people in schools in a timely manner, but also ensure that we do our due diligence.
Mm-hmm. I know that many school districts have had challenges with parent participation unless there's a crisis. And the COVID has certainly shifted priorities, but parental participation, as you know, is a foundation of any successful education system. What's your plan or strategy for bringing parents back into the fold to focus on, you know, critical educational issues, you know, particularly when, even though schools were in last year, there have always been, you know, concerns about learning deficits that children have experienced because of COVID and absences and the like?
Yeah, it's a great question. In fact, we have learned a lot through the pandemic and in how we can deepen the partnership. So I want to echo and double down on what you just said about how important the partnership is, right? We've all been in a scenario as parents or as a child and have seen how powerful it can be when the parent and the educator are on the same page, right? It's not easy to get away with not being your best and being the best student. And mm-hmm. So what we have seen during the pandemic, when we moved to virtual events for our parents, we saw a dramatic uptick in participation. And so what we drew from that is it is more convenient in many cases for families. We can offer it at different hours of the day, and parents can multitask and potentially, you know, do the dishes for the day and listen to a conversation or engage with a teacher or educator via video or phone. So what we've done is we created a series of virtual events last year where we covered topics that families expressed interest in, whether that's literacy, how to talk to your child about bullying, you know, how to talk to your child about racial injustice. And so we intend to continue that strategy, and we see that as a way to continue to foster relationships with parents, even when they can't be in our buildings physically. Does that make sense? You know, and mm-hmm. you wouldn't have thought that we would have gained that from this experience, but it was a huge learning for us.
Well, it would seem to me that interested parties, parents, grandparents, guardians, really wouldn't have any choice if they cared about their children's education. They have to pivot, just like all of us have had to pivot. If you care about the school system, your child's education, you're going to figure out a way to get it done. And so it does make sense. It does. And speaking of that, one of the other things that I'm sure that you've also had to address and try to figure out is mental health and wellness of staff and teachers and students. What's the plan for addressing that? Because some are just coming back, and you know, it's been I don't think I'm overstating it, that for educators, administrators, students, for everyone, it's been a bit of a rough ride.
Yeah, certainly. And the ride will be more challenging in some aspects of this school year. I don't think we're out of the woods yet, but we certainly covered a lot of ground last year. For our adults, we partnered with our labor unions to establish a wellness center that provides a number of resources for our staff in terms of their own mental health and wellness, which includes strategies for how to stay active, how to have access to mental health professionals. And, you know, we also saw in our schools, you know, yoga clubs, you know, circles for meditation, a lot of different strategies to help our adults be in the best space possible. But what I really appreciated about last year, and I think it's important to note, going into last school year, it was reported that at least 70% of students had experienced trauma in a way that was impacting their mental health. So you're talking about almost the vast majority of our students came into our schools needing some type of assistance. And one strategy I think I really cling to, because I think is an important strategy, is students became ambassadors for mental health supports. So in addition to, you know, having a phone line where you can call somebody, scheduling sessions to talk with mental health professionals, we had mental health ambassadors identified throughout our schools that just made the conversation easier, that could handle a peer-to-peer conversation and connect a young person to an adult to have a difficult conversation that they may not want to have at home with their parent or guardian. And so I think the idea of having greater awareness in terms of it's okay to talk about mental health, it's okay to talk about feelings of anxiety or depression, and then it's okay to talk to a mental health professional. And I think that of awareness and the conversation that we're having now, I think this generation of young people are going to be much healthier adults mentally than any other generation before us because they are willing to have those conversations. So I'm hopeful that this work will not only benefit our young people today, but could be long-standing benefits for us for the future. About it, Harold. When we were in school, people weren't having these conversations.
Well, no, they weren't. I agree. And it's funny you should say that, because that very statement that you just made is a conversation that I have with my buddies, with my friends, that, no, we did not have the kind of mental health challenges that we are seeing young people go through now. If those things were there, and I suspect they may very well have been, we were not privy to that information. But as we always say, you know, the world has changed, and sometimes we have to change with it, and sometimes people have not been able to change with it, and those are the stressors. I would ask, was there anything that you didn't get done last year that you want to get done this year?
Well, we have more acceleration work to do, and that includes social and emotional development. But we know that our students were disproportionately impacted by virtual learning. There's been some disparities in learning that we've been trying to address for a number of years. And, you know, my guess is probably some of those gaps widened. And part of the reason is there was a varied amount of support available to students during the pandemic. We know that it was difficult to replicate math instruction because of the manipulative you needed. The visuals were hard to recreate, and think about, you know, how do you learn, you know, ones, tens, and hundreds? Well, you learn that through base 10 blocks. That wasn't available in a virtual learning space. So we got ground to cover there. And then early literacy for our youngest learners who are learning to read, it was also difficult to have that instruction occur in a virtual mode as well. So we still have some acceleration work to do. We've covered a lot of ground. There's a lot of data that we can point to that we had some successes last year. But we need to go deeper, to go further, faster, and that's one of the focus areas for us this coming school year.
What about addressing issues for students with special needs? Have you been able to to bolster that? I know that's always a concern for parents who have students with special needs.
Always. There's certainly a part of that equation where we lost ground with, remote learning. And so particularly our students who are receiving special education services, or as we talked about earlier, English language learning services, many of those services we were able to provide some elements in remote learning environment, but not all. And so we'll continue to double down. One strategy that I will point to that we've utilized that is very promising with those groups of students is having high-intensity tutoring. What that means is you're either in a one-to-one scenario or a small group scenario, no more than 5 to 7 students. And we try to utilize that level of intensity of support for students who have the greatest needs.
Well, D.C. Public Schools Chancellor Dr. Lewis Farabee, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I know there's some challenges coming up, but I certainly wish you the best of luck as school opens next week.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate it. But last reminder, throughout the week, remind everyone that young people are going to be walking and being transported to and from school, whether it's on the metro, whether you're driving, riding a bike, motorcycle, whatever. Let's take care of our young people and make sure they get to school to and from safely. We have that responsibility.
Yeah, drivers, slow down. And, parents who can walk your kids to school, do that as well and to and from. I wholeheartedly agree. Dr. Farabee, thank you again so much. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, August 25th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.